For the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for The Doctor's Inn.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy.
This is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and the Doctor's Inn is a radio show the third Thursday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m., and I try to have subjects and discuss them, subjects health-related, medical-related, mainly for information for you, the listeners, and some of them might be controversial and some not. If you have a subject, medical or health-related, that you want me to have on the show or discuss on the show or have information on, please email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members, that's you, and by Friends of the Arts, a state and local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Paleo, The True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by plumbingsupply.com, the worldwide online plumbing store celebrating its 20th year of service on the Internet. Plumbing supplies from A to Z can be found on their website at plumbingsupply.com. Today's show is going to be about preventative medicine or prevention of health conditions or diseases. And to help us with that today, our guest is Dr. Mark Lundberg, the medical director or health officer for Butte County Public Health Department. Dr. Lundberg was trained as a family physician, so I know he knows a lot about a variety of medical conditions. And here he is with us today to help us out.
Dr. Logan, it's great to be here. It's wonderful being downtown Chico here in the offices, the beautiful office of KZFR. You know, there's something going on downtown, I think, that could improve people's health. I was just noticing coming in here.
What's that?
Well, there's a farmer's market down there.
Farmer's market.
There's a lot of ways that farmer's market could, improve people's health down there. I hope people are taking advantage of that.
Right on.
Besides the good fruits and vegetables, I have heard that just the just the fact you come down and socialize and become a part of a community, you know, see your friends, see your community, that's an improvement in people's health.
Wow. Great. Good advice.
People ought to make sure they come down. Looks like fun down there as we're coming in.
Excellent. Hey, I want to say something before I turn you loose or we turn you loose, Dr. Lundberg, with some information, advice, etc. I want the listeners to know that today on this show, we are opening up to call-ins from you, the listeners. If you have questions about the subject we're discussing, the call-in number is 895-1114. So call-in number is 895-1114, and we'll see if we can help you out with an answer. All right, Dr. Lundberg.
You know, Dr. Logan, there's something else big going on in Chico. I believe that's been near and dear to your heart, in that the Chico Fair opened today, didn't it?
Oh, maybe so. I thought you were going to talk about ice cream or something.
But you've spent a lot of time down there at that fair over the years, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, we have. Yeah, when my boys were little, yes, they showed Minnie the lamb and goat at that fair.
Did you milk those goats in those days? Did you?
No.
No?
No, they were actually market goats. So the little ones were pygmy goats, which were pets only, but... Well, yeah, it was fun. I tried milking one once, and I got kicked, so I just let it go after that.
Well, that's
turned out to be a male. I don't know if that was a problem, but maybe
you
so.
Know, you deserve that, then.
Probably.
You know, I was thinking about different kinds of milk. You know, there's certainly goat milk does have some health benefits. Someone told me just this last week that dragon milk is pretty good. If you know how you can get dragon milk?
No, I do not.
You need to find cows with short legs.
Dragon. I get it.
Okay.
Very good.
But, milk's pretty important.
Excellent.
So, you know, the fair also is a great way to improve your health. I don't think the food out there probably is always so great. But just, again, getting out, seeing your friends and family, being a part of supporting an event like that is good for our mental health, which is good for health.
Yeah, right on. And then what it made me think of when you said the farmer's market and now the fair is walking.
That's right, walking. They're always walking part of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's great. And it's beautiful weather out there, too, right now.
Yes. While we're on the subject of walking, parking your car a little further from the store so you can walk a little further. Don't try to park as close as you can to the store. Get some exercise. It's good for you. And... using stairs instead of elevators if you're able, you know, these are good things.
You know, in family practice, years ago when I was doing that, I'm sure you got a lot of people coming in requesting disability placards. Sometimes I felt bad about, I'd tell patients bringing those in, I'd say, you know, really, I'd rather have you park at the other end of the parking lot rather than the disability parking lot. You should be walking the whole length of the parking lot. It'd be good for you.
I hear you.
You know, sometimes being too close is actually not good for your health.
Right.
I know that they're there for important reasons and they're important people, but there are sometimes people I thought would do better parking on the other end of the parking lot.
Different people, different situations, you betcha. Very good.
Well, you know, Dr. Logan, I saw a billboard in my neighborhood a few years ago, and the billboard said, "This year, thousands of men will die of stubbornness." It was a big red billboard that said that.
Wow.
And it was put out by the federal government. This year, thousands of men will die from stubbornness. That's kind of a curious title. That's all it said.
Huh.
And I'm thinking, well, now what's all this about? I mean, the first thought in my mind was, did their wives kill them? Or what is this stubbornness thing? But what they found is that... men are not so great at getting their health care and keeping themselves healthy, there's some resistance to going to doctors. They found that men are 24% less likely than women to have visited a doctor within the past year, and 22% more likely to have neglected their cholesterol tests. And there's a lot of other measurements of sort of men's neglect, but that was the point of that billboard. And I think we're talking tonight about prevention. That was what they, through that catchy phrase, again, that's all it said, this year thousands of men will die of stubbornness. What they're trying to get across is that there are things that we can do, patients, the public can do, to try to maintain and promote their health that will help them stay healthy. And this was targeting actually men because men were a little more likely not to take care of their health. Have you noticed that?
Yes. And, you know, something that comes to mind when you say that is today we're going to be talking about prevention of health problems, and it'll involve things that we all, which we've already talked a little bit about, things that we all can do to help our own health. And then another part of that has to do with seeing a healthcare provider for health care maintenance or for preventative reasons, not just when you have a cold or have some problem. And so that's what you're talking about. It's okay to see your doctor or your mid-level practitioner, like a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, specifically for preventative health reasons. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. You know, one of the professionals I think that have really got this down is the dentist.
Oh,
the dentist.
Yeah.
You know, they get you in there twice a year, and they really promote that, getting in there and detecting disease and problems before it creates problems and pain for a person. So that's
what's
a good
little
model.
What's that little saying? A pinch of prevention is worth more
pound
than
a pound
of cure. Yeah, something, whatever the phrase is.
There's some wisdom there.
There's wisdom somewhere there.
Yeah, so that's exactly the idea. I know that I'm in this category of this little bit of stubbornness. I know what that feels like.
Yes.
Personally.
Yes.
But anyway, that's the idea. The topic that I wanted to talk about was about addressing problems. These are procedures, or these are steps you can take before you have any symptoms. Now, these are things, if you have symptoms, then you need to see a doctor for those symptoms and you need to have them looked into. But this is about addressing your health by seeing a doctor, a mid-level, a clinician who will do procedures or do something that will help you prevent a disease from coming on.
I don't mean to keep getting in your way, and I'll make this quick, but I was thinking about that driving over here, that as a family physician, much of what I do is in attempt to prevent medical consequences, medical problems from coming up. I know you're going to get into this later about screening tests, et cetera, but when we treat patients with high blood pressure, when we treat patients with diabetes, those are two examples. What I'm doing is trying to prevent problems as a consequence of those medical conditions, trying to prevent heart attack and stroke and kidney failure and problems with the feet, etc. So patients feel fine, but I'm trying to help prevent problems before they are problems. Is that right for you too?
That's exactly the idea. I know in your professional life, you have given many trainings at Enloe over the years about diabetic care. I know a lot of that is about preventing the complications of diabetes.
Right.
I know that I've heard you say before how important it is, for example, in diabetic care to check the feet.
Right. Keep track of your feet.
There's just a lot of problems that can happen, and if you're not checking those, you can get into to big trouble.
And I see it every day, or nearly every day, problems with the feet, et cetera. Prevent. We want to prevent that. Yes.
You know, the emphasis in the Affordable Care Act, a lot of that was on prevention and trying to make prevention, not cost anything. I think trying to make it so that you can get your checkups, you can get these things done and get them at really low cost, try to encourage people to get in. Have you seen that that's helped at all?
I have been seeing that, like mammograms, health. I just saw a young woman the other day, healthy, and she came in for her physical exam because she now has that insurance, and that was excellent. And now she'll have a baseline for future reference, and it's. I think it's a good idea. Yep,
I agree. So we do hope that people have a means to get in and get these procedures done and get these preventive tests done to help prevent the disease.
Yeah.
So a lot of in the federal level, there is an agency called the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and they have put out some recommendations. I would call them the minimal level of procedures. When your listeners are going to their doctor, they may find their doctor recommends an additional procedures, but this would be what I would call the minimum, sort of the minimum level. And these recommendations come from what's called the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force. So a group of professionals get together and look at the evidence. What is the evidence? And try to base the recommendation on evidence. Again, when you see your own doctors, there may be some some really great experience that your doctor may have that goes beyond these recommendations. But the recommendations I wanted to talk about tonight, Dr. Logan, were those that come out of you know, what does the evidence show? So this would be what I would consider minimal, kind of a minimal thing people ought to consider. And they've graded the evidence and to try to make these recommendations really evidence-based, and I'm sure they'll be changing a lot over the years. But, for example, you know, with women, they break it down, men and women, and so there are some screening tests that healthy women should consider getting. Some of these I don't even know very well because they didn't exist when I was doing family practice, and I hope you...
In the dark ages?
In the dark ages, yes. But for example, there is a gene. There's, you know, with genetics being so important now, and with I think a lot of medicine in the future is going to be based on our unique genetics. There will be tests being done to look at our genetics. There's a gene that puts women at risk for breast, ovarian, and other cancers called the BRCA gene. And some women, if they have that, really need to watch really careful for those cancers. And there's a way, I've never ordered that test in my life, but I do know that, isn't that what Joel, that the actress,
what's her name?
Oh, what's her name?
Had, and ended up with breast cancer?
Yeah, and she had that gene, and she ended up having some...
Angelina Jolie.
That's right, Angelina Jolie. She had that gene, and uh-huh. So she had some preventive surgeries done to try to prevent ovarian cancer and other. But
gotcha. And remember, and I'm hearing you say that, and I want the listeners to understand that indeed that's in families where, as they say, where there is a significant family history. In other words, other members of your first degree relatives, and maybe one generation from that, have had breast cancer, ovarian cancer, or what they say peritoneal cancer, which is just a cancer that can sometimes be in the belly and not related to a specific organ, then that is a person who could talk to their healthcare provider about this BRCA or BRCA gene testing. For the general population of women that with no family history of colon or breast cancer, I'm sorry, no family history of breast or ovarian cancer, then it probably would not be a step your healthcare provider would suggest. Yes, positive family history. Talk to your healthcare provider about that genetic testing. Blood test. That's a blood test.
Just all it is a blood test.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that can really help direct some care in the future if
right.
you happen to have that gene.
Right.
And I do believe that probably in the future there'll be more tests like that that'll help.
Yeah, I bet you're
kind
right.
Kind of create a risk assessment for us.
Yeah.
You already mentioned breast cancer screening. There's recommendations for when to get your mammograms. Some of that's customized, but most of the time the recommendation is age 40 and older, getting them every 1 to 2 years.
Is that what you've, that's kind of what I do too, yeah. Generally speaking, I think, now again, these recommendations change over time, but I think starting, again, these are people for screenings, that women for screenings, that is, no abnormal lumps, no lumps or bumps that are being looked at specifically. So normal self breast exam and physician or healthcare provider exam, and just a screening mammogram for breast cancer evaluation would be probably, I think, starting around age 40. And then at that age, not yearly, I don't think any of us would push for yearly. Again, that is with somebody without family history, just for screening mammogram, probably starting at age 40 and do it about every 2 years, maybe 3 years. Talk to your provider about that. And then, go ahead, and then as you age, Dr. Lundberg, did you want to proceed with that?
On the breast cancer part?
On the breast cancer, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and then what I know, I see that this recommendation talks, well, let me just tell you what I think most of us do. Once you hit age around 50, I think most of us start talking about a mammogram every year. Again, I think that's a recommendation that has been... can have some controversialness to it, but my advice at this point would be, again, screening only, no family history, no abnormal lumps or bumps that you're following, mammogram every year at starting at age 50. Again, every other year starting at age 40, probably. And then once you age, I think once a woman gets into her elderly stage, let's say, it depends on your health, but I think I don't know what the recommendations for others are, but I think once you get into your 70s and 80s, depending on your health again, then that frequency of mammogram or mammograms being obtained would be determined by your health. So I think that's a specific and individually determined recommendation with you working with your healthcare provider about that. So yes, mammograms can continue into the elderly, but it depends on your overall health and advice by your provider.
Sure makes a difference catching breast cancer early, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Staging in early stages, and the treatment options are much better and the outcomes are much better.
Absolutely. And that's a statement about all cancers, isn't it?
That's right.
The main problem with cancers is finding them early before they've spread anywhere. If we all should understand that a cancer starts in a single site. Let's take breast cancer. Starts at a single site in the breast, and you say, "Well, just remove that piece where the cancer is." And I would say, "Yeah, great idea. Let's do it." And that happens. We call it a lumpectomy when just that one piece of cancer is removed. However, the problem is knowing when or if that cancer has started to spread away from that initial site and to other areas of the body, and we call that metastatic. And that is the problem. It's easy to remove the lump. it would be nice to be curative and cure the person by removing the lump only if it's found early and not spread anywhere yet. The problem becomes, of course, how to handle or treat the patient whose cancer has spread throughout the body. We want to find it early. And mammograms can find changes in the breast that indicate the potential for a cancer being present before it's feelable with the hand, before it's feelable by the patient feeling her own breast or the provider feeling it. That's the beauty of mammogram, finding it early. Calcifications or other changes can be picked up before anything's felt. And then a simple needle biopsy. I know needle sounds gross, but it's a simple step to obtain some cells. If you can find it early before it's feelable, before it's spread anywhere, then you have a chance for a cure. And that's the great thing. Mammograms, as you know, are X-ray. The only thing that there's only one piece about advising mammograms, as I have a few minutes ago, and that has to do with the amount of X-ray that you're giving the patient and giving her breast. To this day, what year is this? 2015, mammogram is the screening test. Someday, maybe we'll have MRIs that are inexpensive and available to do this, and that would be great. However, to date, it's mammograms. Ultrasounds are helpful too, but they are not adequate, and to date, I think most of us will have a mammogram occur only if something has been felt by the patient or by the doctor or provider, or of concern, and we need more information, then we'll also order ultrasound, or if the mammogram finds something suspicious, then ultrasound is added as an additional information. But as a screening test in and of itself, I think most of us do not use the ultrasound at this point in time.
That's great. So that's breast cancer, and that's a very important cancer to detect early, and there should be a plan with your provider to screen for that over your lifetime as you age. Other cancers that are important?
I hate to just beat it up here, but the issue of hormone replacement and hormones playing a role. You know, what could women do to try to prevent breast cancer in themselves? I would say one thing we all need to know, you all need to know as women, is female hormone replacement or taking prescription hormones is something that requires a bit of discussion with your provider. You and your provider have to be on the same page as to whether if this indeed would slightly or somewhat increase the likelihood for breast cancer coming up in you in the future, then you need to know that, and you need to know what screening options your provider and you have decided on to follow you while you're on those hormone replacement and for later.
When you talk about treatment that might affect breast cancer, this U.S. Task Force on Prevention did mention also that there are some women that the clinicians should offer them prevention medicines such as tamoxifen, that might be indicated in some women. I've never made that decision myself, but they do mention that might be indicated in some high-risk women. Have you seen that before?
I've heard of it, and I know I don't do that. I mean, I'm not comfortable with that, and I hear that. And I don't think generally that's standard. And who would get maybe somebody with family history, strong family history, would come under that. My advice would be if somebody has strong family history of breast cancer and they're contemplating tamoxifen, I think seeing an oncologist, a cancer specialist, to be one of your doctors to help you with your plan would be a good idea. That's what I would say.
That sounds like a great
answer.
And
by the way, the opinions voiced on this show are mine and yours.
That's right. Yeah, see your doctor for any specifics.
Yeah, that's right.
The other cancers that women should be considering besides breast cancer to try to screen, and that's cervical cancer and colon cancer.
What's the cervix? What do you mean cervical? Is that the neck?
You know, that is a confusing term, isn't it?
Because
there are cervical vertebrae in the upper part of your neck. Yeah.
So cervix is two places on the body, right? And some of us in medicine, we call the neck, if we're going to get an x-ray of the neck spine, that's the cervical spine. But Dr. Lundberg is not talking about the neck.
That's right. Not talking about that. The opening to a woman's womb, the uterus, opening to the uterus. At the end of the vagina, there is a part of the body called the cervix, and that is a risk, an area that can become cancerous and needs to be monitored or screened over a woman's lifetime for detection of cancer. And those recommendations have sure changed a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You start screening women really early and having to do it every year. As a minimum, this U.S. Task Force on Prevention recommended that women starting at age 21 get a pap smear every 3 years until you're 65 years of age. And then there was a lot of there are some caveats about other unique risk factors women might have or differences in people's health that might change that. But what do you think of that recommendation?
I think that sounds reasonable. I think let's back up slightly and understand that cervical cancer or the opening of the uterus, cancer there, speaking of things changing over the years, is ideas on what the cause of cervical cancer. You know, most cancers, we don't have the ability to say what causes them specifically. But cervical cancer is a little different in that it appears that a virus of sexually transmitted disease virus, human papillomavirus, does appear to be a risk factor. Give people a risk for acquiring cervical cancer. Human papillomavirus is, a virus that's passed sexually. It has a number of categories. There are some human papillomaviruses that do not tend to be increase a woman's risk for cancer of the cervix, and there are a handful of them that do increase the likelihood for cervical cancer. So when you think about screening tests for cervical cancer, the first thing that we all think of is, when do you become sexually active? And because if you've never been sexually active, you're not going to have human papillomavirus at your cervix. So it's really when the woman begins sexually active, then you start making plans for when their first pap smear is going to be. The task force recommendation of age 21, I think, is kind of a a generalization. If a woman starts becoming sexually active at age 13, 14, 15, then I think they really should start having cervical cancer screening I'm just saying this, again, this is the voices, the opinions are voice or mine. I would say 2 to 3 years after they become sexually active. So depends. They may be someone who should start having pap smears at 18, 17, 20, not 21, but that 21 is a general idea, general public women starting at age 21.
And the other thing you said about HPV that's important is, you know,
HPV is human papillomavirus, this virus we were talking about.
The human papillomavirus, HPV, is that some of those create external warts you can see.
Oh, yeah.
But those aren't always the ones that put you most at risk for cancer. Some of the ones that don't, aren't likely to produce external visible warts are the ones that are most at risk for causing cancer. So just because you may have no history of seeing any warts, external warts, does not mean you're not at risk for human papillomavirus and the risk of cervical cancer.
That's exactly right. So what Dr. Lundberger is saying is some of the strains of human papillomavirus cause venereal warts or warts around the vagina or on the penis of the male. And these are does not necessarily in and of themselves put you at risk for cervical cancer. But like he has said, it is absolutely true. Women with human papillomavirus noted on their pap smear do not generally have an external warts that are visible. This is a silent hiding in there situation. So if just because you don't have external warts does not mean you don't have human papillomavirus at your cervix.
So that also means that the vaccine for human papillomavirus is a cancer prevention vaccine. There is one other cancer prevention vaccine, and that we consider hepatitis B to be a cancer prevention vaccine because a lot of hepatic cancer, liver cancer, is caused from hepatitis B. So this human papillomavirus vaccine is a cancer prevention vaccine.
So tell us a little bit about human papillomavirus vaccination. When do we start it, and how many shots, et cetera?
Oh, we start it young folks when they're...
And is this just girls or boys?
We know it's really focused to girls because that's the cervical cancer prevention. But there is a recommendation that boys should get vaccinated.
And why would that be?
Well,
who passes it to the girl? Who passes it to the girl?
Where do they get that virus anyway?
Exactly. It's sexually. So the boys carry it. They don't know it. Or men, I should say. Boys and men. But we're talking about vaccinating young teens. So that's why I said the word boys.
Yes.
Go ahead. When does human papillomavirus vaccination start, generally advisable to start?
Do you have that recommendation?
No, I don't. Not at the top of my head.
It's probably at that high school entry evaluation is when we start encouraging it.
Oh, God, I should have known this. My nurse is going to be so mad at me. It's young teen. Ask your provider. And it's more than one shot. I think it's a series of three with, I think, a month between the first one and then maybe 6 months after that for the third one. Since Dr. Logan and Dr. Lundberg don't know those details, please ask your provider. I do think that human papillomavirus vaccination is a good idea. Again, it's preventing cervical cancer is the goal.
It's a great idea. Then also moving on to colon cancer.
Hey, let me say one more thing before you do that. Call-in number, if you have questions, call-in number 895-1114. All right, go ahead there.
So on colon cancer, you know, patients should all we're kind of focused on women right now, but women ought to have a plan to start thinking about preventing colon cancer starting age 50. And there are several tests that your doctor might use. Among those could be a colonoscopy, and there are some other radiologic tests that sometimes doctors might recommend, but some kind of a colon cancer screen ought to be done. And that begins at age 50. Have you probably recommended a few colonoscopies in your practice, Dr.
Yes,
Logan?
I have. Could you repeat that recommendation on when to start and how to do it?
Well, it really should start at age 50 particularly women ought to be start having a plan. And the U.S. Task Force, they just mentioned there are several tests. They do mention, for example, stool test or colonoscopy. I really think that it's very much the practice that colonoscopies are recommended, but they don't take a position on that. They just say you need to have a colon cancer
screening.
You need to see your doctor about getting screened for colon cancer being age 50.
Gotcha. So here's how I would see that. Remember, you know, when we think about colon cancer, colon is the large intestine, right? And so when we're talking about the population of men and women, you know, not just women, not just men, but the population as a whole, what is the most common cancer for men and women together? I believe it's lung. Is that correct?
That's right.
And then second on the list is colon. Is that correct?
Talking about the two of them together, yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the men and women population, colon cancer is the second most common cancer in humans. And so, again, finding it early before it has spread anywhere, before it has become metastatic. And your colon is not something that's just sitting around where you can look at it, you know what I mean? So if you wait until you have symptoms of cancer, such as bleeding when you have a bowel movement or discomfort in your belly or change in your bowel habits, then you've waited, unfortunately, to a time when undoubtedly that cancer has spread somewhere in your belly, and a cure of that cancer is, if it is just impossible or nearly impossible. So the idea, here's another one of those cancers where the idea is to find it early before it has spread anywhere. So what we have to do is, unfortunately, look inside the colon or the large intestine. And so I think most of us nowadays, I will say, advise the full colonoscopy starting at about age 50. Now, this is in people without any blood in their stool, that is, without any symptoms of seeing blood in their with their bowel movements or belly pain or change in their bowel habits. Because if any of those things happen to you before the age of 50, say, for instance, in your mid-30s to 40s, then you need to talk to your doctor about the about what's going on, and then you may be asked to have a colonoscopy younger than age 50. So when we talk about, when Dr. Lundberg and I are talking about colon cancer screening right now, the term screening means somebody who doesn't have any symptoms or signs of any cancer, we're otherwise healthy person, we're looking for cancer before any symptoms have come up. And again, start at age 50, and colonoscopy, the only downside of colonoscopy from my standpoint is cost. It's a $1,000 or $2,000 at least, probably more, test. It does require that you clean out your bowel. In other words, you're given a laxative to stay in the bathroom with for a while to clean out your bowel, and then you have a look of the colon. The specialist or whoever, gastroenterologist or other doctor who does your colonoscopy, it's done with what we call conscious sedation. So you have an IV in your arm and you're essentially asleep. So people have their colonoscopy and they wake up after very brief sleep thing they do. So you wake up quickly after it's over and they go, "Hey, when are we going to start the test, doc?" And they go, "You already had it done. And it looked great." And now one of the beauties of colon cancer screening on this subject is if you do not have any abnormal things in your colon, such as polyps, which or cancer, of course, then we say to people, and that's, we say, come back in 10 years for your next colonoscopy. 10 years is a long time. And so you'll go, whew, that's good. Occasionally polyps are found, and polyps are of two kinds generally, hyperplastic type or adenomatous type. If we find people who are making adenomatous, which means glandular nature, polyps or little growths in the colon, then we say, wait a minute, When colon cancer does occur in humans, it's usually from one of these adenomatous polyps. The vast majority of adenomatous polyps in anybody do not turn to cancer, but a few of them do. So we want to prevent cancer. So when we find people who are a maker of adenomatous polyps on their colonoscopy, we say, you know what, don't come back in 10 years. You come back a little sooner. We've got to keep a little closer on you to prevent you from getting colon cancer. We're going to see you back in 3 to 5 years for your next colonoscopy. By the way, I should say, then you said other things, looking for blood in the stool or occult blood in the stool as an option. And Dr. Lundberg and I believe, agree from what I took from what he was saying, in that I'm not opposed, of course, to people checking for occult blood in the stool, and I think it's a good idea. However, when you're looking for occult blood or blood you can't see with the naked eye in the stool and using that as a screening test for colon cancer, that is not, in my mind, that is not adequate. If your lesion in your colon is already bleeding, then number one, it may not have spread yet. It may be small and not spread out to the rest of your body yet. But you're going to miss the polyps, the adenomatous polyps, for that prevention step. So, because they don't bleed generally. So, by the way, some people will start screening for colon cancer by doing occult blood or blood you can't see with the naked eye of stools starting at age 40 in men and women. Yearly, you give a little stool sample, and the doctor or the lab tests it for blood or blood you can't see with the naked eye. And then if that was positive, then you would go on for more extensive testing, such as colonoscopy. But again, so probably stool for occult blood starting at age 40. And then once you hit 50, probably colonoscopy, depending on the findings, maybe every 10 years, maybe sooner, depending if you had polyps or anything else of interest.
Well, you're incredible wealth encyclopedia. You're an encyclopedia, Dr. Logan. I mean, that's amazing.
I have interest in these subjects. I guess you didn't bring duct tape with you today, did you, for my mouth?
That's
bummer.
Fantastic.
Maybe next
fantastic.
Time.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So you know, there's a couple other interesting viruses that they recommend that healthy, normal people should be screened for, which is a little different than when I remembered it from the past. As I looked over what the U.S., again, this is the U.S. Preventive Medicine Preventive Task Force, one was screening every adult under 65 for HIV.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the recommendations.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
Now they don't say anything about risk factor. They just say everyone should have it done.
I think HIV, remember, human immunocompromised virus. Well, what does that stand
human
for?
Immunocompromising virus. Suppressive virus.
So that's the virus that causes AIDS. So the general advice is all humans under the age of 65 should have it at least once. Is
at least
that right?
Once, no matter what the risk factors.
Simple blood test.
Simple blood test. Get added to other blood tests that are being done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I think part of the recommendation probably has to do with we need to change the testing stigma. You know, people who are afraid to be tested because they think is going to stigmatize them as, oh boy, what's wrong with them? If we all get tested and we just make an agreement, we all are going to get tested. It makes it easier for everyone to get tested if we just all do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one recommendation. Everyone 65 and under should be tested for HIV. The other one is different than I had remembered for years ago, and that's hepatitis C screening. Used to be that I would have only recommended hepatitis screening if you have a history of ever injecting drugs. Say you're a drug abuser, say you use heroin or inject cocaine, or had received a transfusion before 1992. But the U.S. Task Force on Prevention, looking at data and making this data-based, said that anybody born between 1945 and 1965, that is another risk factor, and they ought to be screened for hepatitis C. So that's a... Do you remember that when that changed? Do you remember more my memory? It was injecting drug users, or you had a blood product before 1992.
Right, right. I wasn't familiar with this, and I don't think of advising my patients of this until today. So that's hepatitis C. It's a simple blood test, screening test. If you're born between the ages of between the years of 1945 and 1965, as I was.
As I was.
It's advised to at least have one time screening test for hepatitis C. Again, like Dr. Lundberg said, if you have ever in your life injected anything that wasn't done by a doctor, in other words, drugs or anything, ever in your life, you should be screened. And then if you ever received a blood transfusion before 1992, then you should have a at least once in your life a blood test for screening for hepatitis C.
So then some other blood tests that could be considered for women, and that's screening for diabetes or screening for cholesterol in some cases. Those are two other diseases to be looking for. In the case of cholesterol, it's interesting when they looked at the evidence for women, it wasn't for every single woman. Now, I think that is probably a very common practice that doctors, your primary care doctor, will order a cholesterol screen for you. But if you're looking at the evidence, it looks like what the recommendations are here, women should get a blood cholesterol level. If you smoke tobacco or use tobacco, you're overweight. If you have a personal history of heart disease or blocked arteries, or a male relative in your family had a heart attack before age 50, or a female relative before age 60. So there is, but I do believe it's probably more common practice. Again, this is the minimum level. Common practice that women probably get more often get that done, just all women.
Gotcha. And remember the idea of cholesterol is that elevated cholesterol in some people can increase the likelihood for artery disease or atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries that could lead to heart attack and stroke at a younger age than you would like it to. So if you have any risk factors for artery problems in your life, such as high blood pressure, cigarette smoking, family history of heart attack or stroke of your parents or siblings or your maternal or paternal uncles or aunts at a relatively young age, like Dr. Lundberg said, in their 50s or younger, or if you have diabetes, then your cholesterol is something that should be followed. It should be tested for sure. We have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, I like your show.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
And what was your name?
My name is Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
This is Dr. Lundberg.
I wanted to ask you about the HPV exams, particularly for boys and men. I really appreciate you covering a lot of the women's health, especially. But is there, a regular exam for boys and men? Because, I mean, if it starts there, is there any kind of emphasis on testing for boys and men?
That's a very good question. I think I could answer it in one word and say no, but the explanation there is HPV or human papillomavirus there's a number of varieties of human papillomavirus, and some of them are the ones that cause venereal warts or warts on the skin of the penis or around this pubic area there, or around the vagina externally on women. But the type we're talking about with on the cervix of women, like we were saying earlier, do not necessarily and likely would not have, in many cases, have any external visible, seeable warts. So it would, if a man or a boy have any external growths like warts on their genitalia, then yes, they should see their healthcare provider, but we don't have a regular screening that we say do for that. If you're wondering if there's a similar test to the pap smear that we could do on other parts of the body, such mm-hmm. as the skin of the penis or the skin of external vaginal area or something, there isn't, to my knowledge, a pap smear type screening. However, if there was something that a doctor wondered about on the skin in that area of the body, a biopsy would, a simple, small punch biopsy would be able to not only determine what the thing was, but it would also be able to tell us if it's human papillomavirus.
And so no blood test for that?
No, don't you wish.
Because that was,
Yeah. Hey, figure that out. Come up with one, would you?
Yeah.
You know, right. It's kind of like the same idea with herpes virus. The blood test is there is a blood test to tell us if we have antibodies to certain viruses, but what it doesn't tell us is if we have the actual virus in us causing problems at the time. So blood tests, this kind anyway.
That is really something
we don't have. Now that's a little different story when we look at things like HIV virus and hepatitis C virus, because we do have blood tests to look at the specific virus in the bloodstream on those. It's just we don't have them for other viruses, at least at this point, that I'm aware of, at least clinically in regular practice.
Dr. Logan, just to Cindy, a question to follow up for me for Dr. Logan. Is there a treatment for warts with men if they're visible warts? Is there a treatment?
Yes, and that is a... Unfortunately, and that would be the same if there are external warts, vaginal area or anywhere else on the body in women too, men and women, boys and girls. It's actually not a great method, but it's destruction of the cells. In other words, you kill the virus, the skin cells that have the virus in them and are making the wart be there. You kill them with something such as liquid nitrogen freezing. Which actually is the same part of the same treatment that is done for women who have HPV at their cervix. They can have cryotherapy or killing the cells of the cervix with freezing therapy. So don't you wish we had just a put on this kill the virus cream or something? You know, to my knowledge, it doesn't exist. I suppose that's something that somebody somewhere is working on. But it's freezing, and there are some liquids killers, you know, chemical kill stuff, even over the counter. But I would talk to your provider, what healthcare provider, for which method they would advise.
And Dr. Logan, are you able to tell people they are cured from HPV when you have your patients? you may be able to treat them and they're not visible, but are they cured?
This is so funny. It's funny about who's asking who the questions here. caller, let me thank you very much, and I'm going to answer that question with you off the air. Is that all right?
Well, okay, one last thing.
Oh, sure.
And I just still can't emphasize how much to push condoms. It's just so important.
Hey, thank you for bringing that up. Condoms to prevent the spread of venereal disease, be it viruses or other, between men and women, boys and girls. Condoms, very important. Prevention. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, caller. When you have human papillomavirus or herpes virus or these types of viruses, when we treat them, the answer is no, there is no cure. In other words, we would treat the wart with, say, liquid nitrogen, or the woman would have cryotherapy or therapy to try to kill all the cells at the cervix. And if you're asking for a cure, that does not exist. We don't have a way of making sure all the virus is dead. So say, for instance, a woman has an abnormal pap smear that showed human papillomavirus, she needs to have regular pap smears on throughout her life to watch out for any changes of cervical cancer, because we don't have a cure. Oh, hey, by the way, condoms, free condoms at public health department, is that correct?
We have many, many, many free condoms for people, and they can come in.
So that's good to know.
Anytime, you know, we have a outbreak of gonorrhea going on right now, and we also have an outbreak, you know, increasing numbers of syphilis going on in Butte County right now as well.
Hey, call in. We only have a few more minutes left of the show, so call in number. Anybody else has a call question? 895-1114. That's 895-1114. Call in if you have a question. Dr. Lundberg.
So, you know, we've really covered some great prevention here, haven't we? We kind of looked at what the task force say about women, but there's a few other things just if you want to mention about women that they recommend. They say that women should be screened for STDs, particularly focused on women that are 24 years and younger that are sexually active. They ought to be screened for gonorrhea and chlamydia. That's recommended. Also, lung cancer is a cancer that I think is fairly new to be screened for. If you're a smoker, there are certain indications where lung cancer can be screened for. Not everybody should be screened for that, but that'd be something that's a new kind of new to me is screening for lung cancer in certain cases.
Yeah, and the methods to do that with have changed. There, you know, you'd think, well, have a chest X-ray, but unfortunately, a chest X-ray may not be all that's may not do the best screening. Is that correct?
That's right. So they're really recommending. I think they call them low dose CAT scans, or they some term for that. But
yeah.
But it's not every woman. This is just right. Your doctor would do a risk assessment, and there are certain people who are smokers, history of smoker or current smokers that should have that.
Right. And then prevention-wise, quit smoking.
Quit smoking. Amen.
Prevent a lot of problems. How about... Yeah, okay. Hey, Dr. Lundberg, as usual, it's been wonderful having you on the show, and we just... Essentially, was the tip of the iceberg
it
on the prevention.
It was just the tip of the iceberg, wasn't it?
And so... I'm going to ask you, put you on the spot right now. Would you be interested in coming back on the show again in the future?
It would be a great topic. I think it's so important. I would love to come back, and we'll focus more on there are some focus on men. We didn't really talk about men very much, a little bit, but we didn't look at men. And also, we could look at some of the recommendations for actually medical treatments that people can do that are preventive in orientation.
So thank you again, Dr. Lundberg, and stay tuned in the future because he will be back. And thanks to Ray Lager, the engineer for this show. And remember, we're on the third Thursday of each month, 6 to 7. Let's see. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR members, and by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, cross-country skiing, camping, and just enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is located in downtown Chico at 176 East 3rd Street. Their telephone number is 345-5011. Stay tuned for the Story Garden, and I will see you in 1 month at the Doctor's Inn.
To be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, no. Or prescription to be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
All in my baby's arms. Could take away this.